Welcome to Geopolitical Horizons, the podcast from thegeopolicy.com. This week, we want to continue our geopolitical series looking at the world's key nations, and we want to have a look at France. So we'll get straight into it. We've got Adnan Khan here, the founder of Geopolity. How are you keeping, Adnan?
I'm good, Youssef. How are you?
I'm not bad. So let's start from the beginning. What are France's geopolitical imperatives and constraints?
Okay, so the French, if anyone has a map of Europe in front of them, you will see that France sits at the heart of Europe. It's on the western edge of the European continent, and this has had a big impact on its imperatives over the centuries. So France really, you could say, has four imperatives. The first is maintaining French identity. So the French really, the identity of the French has evolved over thousands of years. And France is quite unique today. It's in a position where being French, it's very clear. What not being French is very, very clear. However, this was not always the case. So although France has significant internal unity today, and unlike other countries, it doesn't have like minorities or different variations of the French, but this was actually a problem for most of its history. So maintaining the French identity is the first imperative. The second imperative is defending the French core. The Beauce region, which is really the region around Paris, this is the core of France, and it has significant rivers, it has significant trade potential, and this is one of the reasons why the capital of France today is in the north of the country next to Paris. Paris is on the intersection of various rivers, which allow the transport and trade of goods. So defending this is a French imperative. And the fact that France sits on the northern European plain, and I think we've discussed this looking at Russia and Germany, the role the northern European plain has played in invasions of various countries on the plain. So the second imperative for France is protecting the French core, which is the Beauce region. The third imperative is the French need to protect the eastern border, and this is the border it has with Germany. This has been the traditional invasion route against France. If you look at the north of France, you've got the Atlantic. If you look at the northwest, it's got the Atlantic again. Then in the southwest, you've got the Pyrenees Mountains, which usually protects it from any invasion from Spain. Then in the south of the country, you've got the Mediterranean. So France is unique in that it straddles two oceans, the Mediterranean and the English Channel. Then in the southeast, you've got the Italian or the Swiss Alps that protects it against any invasion. The area where it could be invaded is the northern European plain on its eastern border. And this has been the traditional route of invasion by Germany. So protecting the eastern border is a key French imperative. And the fourth and the final one is France needs to engage beyond Europe. And the reason why it needs to do this is the Europeans have a history of colonizing the rest of the world and strengthening themselves. The French need to engage beyond Europe in order to keep an eye on what are the Europeans doing and get in the way or act as spoiler if they get too strong. And actually, the French need to strengthen themselves as well. So engaging beyond Europe is a key imperative because the Dutch, the British, the Germans, the Spanish, the Portuguese, they all did it as well. So they're really France's four imperatives: maintaining the French identity, defending the French core, protecting eastern France or its eastern border, and engaging beyond Europe.
That's fine. That's interesting, Adnan, the imperatives. What about the constraints? What holds them back?
So probably the major constraint in all of this is you need a large economy that can provide you with the wealth to build a military and to defend yourself. And really all the imperatives in many ways are beyond the economic capabilities of France. So what you find is this is why France had to build colonies, they had to invade other countries, they had to engage in colonialism in order to get the resources to achieve this. The second major constraint is France's enemies are around its borders. It's on the same continent, whether it's the British, the German, the Spanish, the Russians. So this is a major constraint. It's very, very costly. America has two oceans that defend it against its enemies. The French sit on the northern European plain, so there's direct access or routes for its enemies. So this has always been a major constraint for it. And then probably the third and final constraint is its biggest enemy is it shares a border with Germany. In many ways, France and Germany have had a historical relationship like Pakistan and India have today. They share a border, and the Germans have a history of invading France. In the last 150 years, France has been invaded 3 times by Germany. So this is a major, major constraint. It means France has to have a large economy. It needs to be able to fund a military. At the same time, it needs to fund a large population. That population needs to be able to have security and engage in economic activity, which will have a knock-on effect. So this has always been a major constraint for the French.
Now, you spoke about the French identity. I feel like France are very protective over their identity. Could you tell us a bit more about it? What is the French identity?
So it's interesting you mention that, because you're right, the French are very touchy about Frenchness, about their identity being very unique, being very superior. But how the French identities come about is quite interesting, because it's not as unique as they make it out to be. Now, the entity we know as France is actually really the product of a centuries-long evolution, during which a complex of regional societies were welded together by political actions, by the desire for territory expansion, by a succession of monarchs, ministers, and soldiers. So the early history of France that we've received from the Romans, and the Romans occupied France from the 2nd century up until the collapse of the Roman Empire in 476, they called the tribe that lived around the rivers in France as the Franks. So during the 8th century, the Kingdom of Franks, they recreated the Western Roman Empire under Charlemagne. They saw themselves as a continuation of the Roman Empire. And then eventually this empire was split between the sons of Charlemagne, who passed away in 814. And eventually this would become the regional borders of France. So the combination of political disasters of the feudal period and the success of and consolidation in various battles with the English, this served as the formative period. This formed the formative period of the French psyche. And then, as we know, in 1790, the rise of nationalism really gave shape to French identity. So just this short history shows you is various factors came to form the French identity. It is not and a lot of these factors were beyond what is today the French borders. So it's quite interesting how touchy and how unique the French feel their identity is, when really many factors beyond France actually came to form the French identity. So it means that the French identity is not very unique to the land they live on or to the territory they have. Actually, many factors beyond there. Even the English could claim that there's some Frenchness in them, because for a long period of history, France and England, for example, were ruled as one territory. So it's quite interesting how the French are today about their identity and Frenchness, when if you look at the history, various factors beyond the French borders actually came to form the French identity.
The French Revolution is considered the beginning of liberal values in Europe, and I guess that's where other countries actually took their values from. How did this shape France and the region?
So the French, they led change in Europe. The setup in Europe, feudal Europe, when the French Revolution happened, which was near the end of the 1700s, what you find is you had a feudal system where you had a small percentage at the top that had all the wealth, where the aristocracy, the nobles were. And then you had everybody else who were serfs or just trying to make ends meet. This class structure and the oppression of the people is what led to the French Revolution. And this led to a lot of fear across Europe, because if the people could overthrow the system and the architecture, then that could spread to the rest of Europe. So what happened in France in terms of the overthrowing of the monarchy and the people and their representatives taken over, this sent a shockwave throughout Europe, because most of Europe had a monarchy that was ruling over them, or a small elite that had all the wealth and oppressed the people. So the French became famous because, even from a philosophical perspective, all the philosophers that were laying down liberal values, individualism, were all French. Montesquieu, Voltaire, Descartes, all of these were French philosophers. So really, when we look at America today, who's coming up with all the ideas and the philosophical principles, what you find, that was France at that time. So the French Revolution really is part of the identity now of the French. They view it as they brought enlightenment to Europe. They were the first ones to bring change in Europe. And they were implementing and spreading their values across the continent. So the French Revolution really was the first time after hundreds of years in Europe where the people managed to overthrow the small elite and take over. And the French celebrate this every year. They celebrate the specific events that led to this actually happening. And this really is probably why the French are really touchy and they see themselves as superior, because as far as they're concerned, they adopted and embraced liberal, enlightened values, and they established society and a system based on this. So this really has now come to form the French identity.
One of the points that you mentioned earlier is the threats on the eastern border. Is this why Napoleon actually tried to expand that way? I mean, everyone knows about Napoleon taking over Europe. Was this one of the main reasons?
No, so Napoleon, interestingly, he took over just after the revolution in 1790. And what actually happened was is the French forces were deployed in different areas across the continent, and Napoleon took over. The problem the French had was when they did their revolution, what came after that wasn't very stable. There was a lot of instability, so it gave an opportunity for anyone potentially to insert themselves into the French political leadership. So Napoleon was a young soldier who was deployed in Italy, and he proved himself quite capable. And as a revolution happened, what he saw was a lot of instability in the country. So he was able to do a coup effectively in the end. And then he used the French liberal values as a cover to expand France's territorial control across Europe. So he wanted to set up a continental-wide system, and under the guise of liberating people, giving them liberal values, giving them civilization, he managed to conquer really all of Europe. And probably the only thing that stopped him was the fact that he tried to conquer Russia, the first of many attempts by different European powers. So what you find in Napoleon is you've got a singular ruler, dictator, who under the guise of spreading liberal values has started to conquer the rest of Europe. So in a way, this was a deviation from what the French believed. But because Napoleon used the cover of spreading liberal values, many people or many French people see Napoleon as a good thing that happened. He went a bit too far. He was a bit of a dictator. But he, you know, everything he did, he cloaked it under spreading liberal values and liberating people, which, if you look, is the perennial argument all Europeans used when they went to Africa and other parts of the world, that we've come to liberate people. So under Napoleon, the French will say it brought stability to the continent. The British, the Dutch, and the Spanish would say he brought instability. And in the end, when he was defeated in the Battle of Waterloo or the Battle of Trafalgar, in 1815, the Congress of Vienna was set up. And what the Congress of Vienna did is it forced the French to give back all the territory they had conquered. The French went back to their existing borders. And basically, for the next 100 years, there wouldn't be a war on the European continent. So this 100-year period, 1815, up until World War One. It's considered one of the most peaceful periods in European history. It's considered where trade and economics flourished. People don't point out the fact that Europeans were still colonizing the world. That's probably the reason why there was a lot of peace. And yeah, that really for you is in the Napoleonic period.
I guess that leads on to the next question, which is that France, like many of the other European countries, they colonized a lot of the world. They had a lot of colonies in Africa. How did France manage these possessions?
So obviously colonization was a brutal process. Effectively, colonization was the raping of countries for their resources. It was the oppression of people, using them as slaves. And the struggle the French had, and this is quite unique with the French, was in all their colonies, it was a very confrontational approach that constantly led to rebellion uprisings. Very different to the British regions or colonies. The British ruled with local leaders. It managed to divide and rule. It managed to support some factions against another faction. So as the people were busy fighting each other or competing with each other, this allowed the British to get on with colonizing countries. So this is what they did in India. The French, on the other hand, had a very confrontational approach. And the reason why this was, the French believed they were superior. So as far as they were concerned, you need to adopt the French language, you need to adopt French values, and you need to like what it means to be French. If they didn't see this, they would take a very confrontational approach, which would lead to rebellions, killings, massacres. So probably France's most important colony was Algeria. And the French, conquered Algeria in 1830, and they immediately set about dominating the land. And their main strategy with Algeria, they actually ruled it as one land. So France and Algeria, although they separated by the Mediterranean, the French saw them as the same country. They saw Algeria as part of France. So what they did was they sent hundreds of thousands of French to go and settle in Algeria. And what you find is, as the years went by, France struggled to contain and control Algeria. So in the first three decades, 1830 to 1860, up to 1 million Algerians of a total population of 3 million were killed by the French due to war, massacres, disease, and famine. And many people now actually say that the reason why France struggled is because the people they were trying to occupy were Muslims. They had separate values. So despite the use of concentration camps, mass executions, and chemical weapons, France struggled really to maintain its occupation of Algeria. And what they discovered is the other areas that they had colonized, like in the Americas, the Caribbean, in the Far East. North Africa was very different because you had Muslims there and they had their own values, and Islam was a main factor in the French failing to actually fully occupy it. And that's why, not surprisingly, the French had to leave the colony in the end. But this was a general theme you find with France: very confrontational approach, very my way or the highway. There was no integration, no nothing like that. And that's why it's not surprising when you see how the French deal with immigrants and Muslims today in France. Very confrontational, very we're superior, you're inferior. This was their attitude when they went to other colonies. And that's why it was a brutal occupation when they had Algeria.
That's a very interesting point because, yeah, France does seem to have a big problem with its Muslim population, with interference in mosques, with them controlling what they can teach. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
It's unfortunate when you look at France today, their view is that you need to show you love what it means to be French. Integration isn't you have a passport, you respect French history, you got to show your Frenchness. That comes from the language, it comes from the values. And in fact, in France, the approach is you will not get mosques, you will not get any services until we see that you've embraced French culture. So this naturally leads to a lot of confrontation. So to give an example, the French believe that Muslims should accept the ridicule of their prophet. They should accept the ridicule of their beliefs because this is freedom of speech, and freedom of speech is a French liberal value. Now, this goes against the very core of Muslim beliefs. So you've got a conflict here. So the British, for example, they deal with this differently. They don't attack your prophet. They never say you can attack your prophet, whilst the French, they're expecting Muslims to accept the ridicule and the abuse of their prophet in order for them to be seen as French. So you just got a contradictory position there. And the French just don't see that. They just see it as you have to accept it. You have to accept the ridicule of your belief for us to consider you as integrating this country. So this is why there's always confrontation with Muslims, there's confrontation with immigrants. And this is what it shows you is the French are unable to convince non-French people of the superiority or the correctness of their values. And because they have failed to do that, they take a confrontational approach. So really, the actions the French are doing are the actions you do when you can't convince someone, you can't show them the strength of your argument, and effectively they resort to bullying.
Germany has always posed a major threat to France, so the two invasions in World War One and Two. Why is this?
So the reason why Germany and France have this very difficult relationship is Europe has been at war throughout its whole history. And Germany, until it was formed in 1871, it consisted of many different districts and federations and royalty territories. And what you find, the French manipulated different kings, different queens, different princesses for their own advantage. So in the 30-year war, I think in the early 1600s, what you find is nearly 20% of the German population died in a European-wide war. And the war happened because all the powers around the German lands were manipulating the different German leaders. So the Germans never really forgot that. So when Germany united the different lands and it became Germany in 1871, they realized straight away that their biggest threat will always be France. There's an antagonistic history. So in 1871, when Germany was formed, they quickly went all the way to Paris and effectually kidnapped the sitting king. So they actually conquered it. And the agreement made was that the border that now became the French-German border would be accepted by the French. And then you see again in World War One and World War Two, it was a repeat of the same strategic challenge. So when we discuss Germany, geopolitical Germany, we discuss that their imperatives are you've got two enemies on your borders. You've got the French on one side and the Russian on the other side. And this is something hardwired into the geography, into the psyche. So although the French and the Germans may go through periods of peace and economic stability, the underlying competition and threat is always there. So this is to do with their history, even before Germany existed, and it's still there, although for the moment they're not dealing with this via military means. It's more being dealt with through economic means.
So France, it was a major power back in World War One, World War Two, but since then it's actually declined a lot. How has it dealt with not being a major power?
So France, and I think this goes to the crux of the discussion about France, Youssef, France has really had a hard time and struggled to deal with its position since World War Two. The French, obviously, as I mentioned, saw themselves as leading change in Europe. They saw themselves as enlightened. They saw themselves as superior. And they've really struggled to come to terms with that they're not really a first-rate power in the world. And I feel this is the underlying issue that then comes across as being anti-immigrant, anti-immigration, anti-Muslims. The French still believe that they're a power. And even after World War II, you'll find, even though France was no longer the global power because the Soviet Union and America were, France still viewed it as that they are a power and they can stand apart from the world. So one of the reasons why France left the leadership or the Central Committee of NATO was because they believed on being on NATO, they're just one nation amongst many. So they actually left the leadership of NATO because of this. You find, for example, the French set up a social democratic system in order to deal with communism. So communism, you know, after World War II, everybody was becoming communist. And the French and the Germans believed that their people would become communist as well. So one of the ways they dealt with this was they set up a system in their countries, despite being capitalist nations. They set up a system where the government played a significant role. And that's why even today in France and Germany, public sector is huge. The government runs a large public sector, health service, things like that. And that proved to be very costly for the economy. It created a significant amount of debt. The other way the French tried to deal with this was by establishing the European Union. So for both political and economic reasons, they set up the European Union. However, what you find is the French really are not happy with the position they're in. And that's why you find many researchers have found that the French in many ways are some of the most depressed people in the world when it comes to their position in the world. So they've really struggled, and that's why you see their superiority and this anti-immigration, anti-Islam sentiment constantly comes out. A lot of it's really to do with we're first-rate power and you're inferior, and this comes out. So they've struggled to really accept that they are no longer a power in the world. They're really just a second-tier power.
Talking about the French people being the most, I think you said, most depressed in the world. Does this indicate that there are more broader underlying problems within France?
Oh, absolutely. They are. France, interestingly, there's been a lot of research on this because over the years, you know, there's so many cities in the world who are trying to be like Paris. There's so many people in the world who want to be like the French people. There's terms they've developed or coined where the joy of living, this was a French value. But what you find is all of this has actually disappeared. So just to quote you, Claudia Senik, she's a professor at the famous Sorbonne University, and she did research on the French people. And, you know, her studies found, yeah, culturally, the French are really miserable people now. And that's because the French malaise, which dates back, in her view, to the 70s, it's really impacted French people. So, you know, the French have very high expectations about quality of life, but the reality here is their golden period has completely gone. And then you find, for example, drug use, the use of antidepressants, these are really, really high. I think in many, many areas, the French actually lead in these areas across Europe. So individualism, which is what France was established upon, was supposed to bring happiness. But what you find is this is not bringing happiness. It's made people even more miserable. And this is what's leading them to turn against immigration and Muslims, thinking that these are the source of their problems. So when you speak to the French, the problem is we have too much immigration. We have too many Muslims who are not integrated. And that's a very black and white way of looking at this. There's more deeper issues in your country. There's issues with your values. There's issues with wealth distribution. There's issues with the vision the French had about their nation. And none of these have been achieved. In fact, they're going the other way. These are the cause of their problems. But it's easy for politicians to point the finger at immigration because it's staring people in the face. And they feel these are the issues as well. So French values are in decline. The French language, its adoption is in decline. And, you know, these are the more fundamental issues.
What are France's medium to long-term challenges?
Okay, so I would say there are three. The first is demographics. France's fertility rate is 1.8 children per woman. The replacement rate is 2.1. So France is well below the replacement rate. So although France is one of the largest populated countries in Europe, going forward, its population is going in decline. It's going the wrong way. So already, 20% of France's population are pensioners. That is a lot of people French workers have to support. And the older population will increase as the younger population begins to decrease. So this is a significant long-term problem. And you find this is across Europe, really. Germany's probably in a worse position. Then you've got France's national debt. France's debt is 120% of GDP. France's debt is more than the economy. And the fundamental reason for this is France has a very large public sector. 20% of French workers work in the public sector. So the social democratic model is actually now a drain on the country. So this impacts so many things. It impacts France having a large military. It impacts, can France even afford its nuclear weapons? It impacts even the role it can play in supporting the European Union. So that's a long-term problem. And the third one, and probably the most important, is Germany announced when Russia invaded Ukraine that it's going to go through rearmament again. For decades, Germany had a very small military. It didn't even invest in it. And nobody wanted them to do it after World War II because Germany always goes to war. Germany has now announced it's going to rearm because of the Ukraine war. And every time Germany has rearmed, it's gone to war. And the first country it goes to war with is the two enemies on its border. And it usually begins with France. So that probably doesn't bode well for France in the long run. So where the French are reducing their military, shrinking their military, the Germans are rearming. So it's literally like history is repeating itself again.
Thank you for your time today, Adnan. If you want to learn more about the issues we've raised today, please check out our website, www.thegeopolicy.com. You can also learn more on other issues by accessing our website, where you'll find comprehensive insights, analysis, articles, and deep dives. Thank you for listening.